Avos per Gimel, Mishnah Chaf 3:20, and in some Mishnahites it's 3:16. We have one more from Rabbi Akiva, and this Mishnah has two parts. The first part deals essentially, at least according to the Bar Tanura, with one of the other great philosophical paradoxes. The previous Mishnah we had, according to the Rambam, the paradox of God's foreknowledge in the wake of our free will, and the question of how both can be exist at the same time. Here, this Mishnah, according to the Bar Tanura, deals with the question of Hashkacha, God's providence, and how that can work in the context of us having free will. Meaning, since we assume that, we have it on tradition, we understand that no blade of grass grows, no person's finger wiggles without Hashem essentially doing it, authorizing it, but actually doing it. So that's the case. So where does free will come in? How can we have free will if Hashem is running the show and doing everything? So the first part of the Mishnah says something that's metaphorical, and it says, Hu haya omer, he used to say this, Rabbi Kiva, hakol nasun be'eravon. Everything is given with a guarantor. Umutsuda perusa al kol achaim. And there's a net spread over all living things, meaning all of humanity. Now, what does it mean that everything is given with a guarantor? So the Bar Tanura sort of adds to the mystery by quoting an Aramaic saying from the Gemara in Sukkah, which if you don't know the Gemara, will leave you kind of confused. It says, Regloi devar nash, people's feet, inun ervun bay, they serve as his guarantor, la'asar demitbo'ai taman, movilin yasei, to the place where a person's meant to be, that's where his feet bring him. What does that mean? Well, that's actually quoting a Gemara, I think quite a famous Gemara, in Sukkah. Let me actually read you the Gemara in full, and so you'll get a picture of what it's talking about here. The Gemara starts out by saying, Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan says, like our Bar Tanura said, Raglai debar inush, like nash, the person's feet, inun ervin la bay, la asar de mitboy taman movilin yase, like the Bar Tanura said, a person's feet are his guarantors, where he's supposed to be, that's where his feet take him. So, the Gemara illustrates that with the following story. Hanu tarte kushai, dehava kame kame shlomo. There were these two, like, very handsome attendants that served Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. Eli Choref v'achia b'nei shisha sofren de Shlomo havo. As the Pasuk says in Malachim, there were these two fellows, Eli Choref and Achia, and they were the sons of Shisha, and they were sofrim, they were scribes who served Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. Yomachar chazia l'malach hamavis tahava ka'atziv. One day Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, saw the angel of death, he was very upset, he was sad. Amalei amai atzivt, says Shlomo HaMelech, what's got you down, angel of death? Amalei, dekabao minei hani tarte kushai diyasfuhacha. The angel of death says, yeah, because I'm supposed to collect these two, you know, people who serve you, these courtiers of yours, who are standing over here. And apparently he's not able to get them. So he's distressed. The Malach HaMavos, the angel of death, is distressed because he can't collect these two courtiers. So Shlomo HaMelech tries to take matters into his own hands to save these guys. And Masrinhu l'se'irim shadrinhu l'machoza deluz. So Shlomo HaMelech, trying to save them from dying, he like sort of secures these like mysterious se'irim, are like demons essentially, that he sends them, these two courtiers, with l'machoza deluz, to the city of Luz. Luz is this sort of also mythological place where people never die. So the point is, if they can get to Luz, they'd be safe. Kimata l'machoza deluz. Shchivu, but as they arrive at the entrance to Luz, right then and there, both these two fellows die. The angel of death was waiting for them right over there. L'machar chazi malach hamavas tahava kabadach. The next day, Shlomo HaMelech sees the angel of death, and now he's very elated. He's happy. Amar le amai badicht, says Shlomo HaMelech, unaware of what's happened. What's so exciting? Why are you in such a good mood today? Amar le, so the angel of death says, ba'asar dabo minai taman. Shadartinu, he says, listen, I had to collect these two courtiers of yours. I'm supposed to get them in the place of Luz. And they were a million miles away from Luz. They're not going to get there, so I'm supposed to do my job. But then magically, you'll never believe what happened, says the Malach HaMavos. The very place where I'm supposed to collect them, boom, they rushed off to meet me over there. So everything worked out great for me, says the Malach HaMavis. So meyad pasach Shlomo va'amar. So Shlomo HaMelech was, you know, he blurted out, Ragloi debar inish inun arvin bay. A person's feet are his guarantors. La'asar de mizvoi taman movilin yase. Like the Bar Tanura said, like Rabbi Yochanan Vav said, like we're saying again here, a person's feet are his guarantors, and the place he's meant to be, his feet take him there. So that's the Gemara. So what the point of that Gemara is, if I understand it correctly, is you can't outsmart Hashgacha. Hashem has a plan, and a person can act with free will. A Shlomo Melech acted with free will. The two courtiers acted with free will. But in the context of the Mishnah, the Gemara over there, when a person's time is up, his time is up. But whatever it is that Hashem needs, Hashem, it happens. It works out for him without infringing on one's free will. Now, I have a different metaphor for this, which might make it a little more clear. This metaphor is based on something I once saw in the writings of Rabbi Arya Kaplan, and which actually reminded me of an event that happened when I was a child. When I went to Gomper Secondary School in the 7th or maybe 8th grade, so there was an event in our school courtyard. One lunchtime, this chess grandmistress woman came to play chess with everyone to play. And like 20 kids or whatever it was, you know, kind of got in a circle, set up 20 chess boards, and she kind of went in a circle playing everybody. And of course, in no time at all, she had beaten all 20 of those kids. So after that display of her, you know, chess expertise, she then, you know, said to the kid who lasted the longest, like the best of the chess players, you know, now you should pick a number between 10 and 20. And he picked the number. Let's say it was 14. I don't remember. And she said, okay. We're now going to play a game of chess. You are white, you get to go first, and I'm going to checkmate you in 14 moves. And exactly that's how it proceeded. On the 14th move, checkmate. So I didn't think too much of it at the time, but in retrospect, something jogged my memory, that is an amazing mashal, really the same thing the Gemara is saying, but I like it better for whatever reasons. I think it's more intuitive. And the point, what I see in that story, is that you see the fellow was playing chess. He was white, he got to go first, and at every step of the way in his playing of the game, he had bechira, he had free will, no one forced him to do anything. But when you're playing against a grandmaster, so you can't outsmart the grandmaster, if somebody moves ahead of you, they see all that's going on. So even though you can do whatever you want, you have free will, no one's, you know, stopping you, but you get boxed into a corner, so exactly where you're meant to be and when you're meant to be there, the grandmaster arranges it. And that really is my metaphor. Which I think is a similar metaphor to what the Gemara is saying, that everything's given be'eravon, everything is given, but there's a guarantee that you'll carry things out. So in other words, a person has free will. We said in the previous Mishnah that a kol, that there was shus in the Sunnah, that, you know, people are given the freedom of choice, but Hashem really runs the whole show, and you can't get away from that. You can't outsmart him. Hashem can't be outsmarted. So that's the first part of the Mishnah. The second part of the Mishnah, that's 1A. 1B is Umetsuda Prusal Kolachaim. There's a net cast like that and enwraps everybody. So again, the Bar Tanura here says that we're talking here about Yisurin V'misa. That means suffering and death. In other words, there's no getting away from consequences. There's one of my Rebbe's favorite quotations, and maybe I said even the recordings earlier in this Avos, is from a woman named Ayn Rand, from the Fountainhead, who said, you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. And that's the idea over here. If you want to ignore Hashem's rules and you want to do the wrong thing, no one's going to stop you. You can ignore Hashem's rules, but there will be consequences, and you won't be able to ignore those. So here we're saying that there's a matsuda prusa. Matsuda is like a net to catch fish. So Hashem's got us in his net, so to speak. And the Mishnahs want to paint something that's sort of like has Hashem as being the sort of nefarious, terrible person that's trying to do something to us, God forbid. But there's no escaping the consequences. You can't get out of the system. So if a person gets out of line, the consequences are going to come find them, whether we're talking about Yisurim in this world or even death, Misa. Now, the second part of the Mishnah is still continuing on the idea of reward and punishment. Remember, we said previously, meaning Rabbi Akiva said in the previous Mishnah, that everything is done... even uvatov ha'olam nidon, the judgment is also coming from a place of goodness. So here we're saying there's no one's forcing you to do the wrong thing, and no one, but there'll be consequence if you choose wrongly. And the second part of the Mishnah gives an elaborate sort of metaphor of people, what I'll call living on borrowed time. As I described in the previous Mishnah, to my mind, the way to think about rachem and mercy from heaven is not that you can get away with stuff. You can't get away with anything. Hashem is not mevater on anything. But the element of rachem in the bria, of mercy, is that a person doesn't just see the second he gets out of line or does some avera, lightning doesn't strike him, doesn't drop dead. Instead, he's given time to, you know, sort out his affairs and get his act in order and, you know, do tshuva and fix himself up. So that's essentially what I'm calling living on borrowed time. And a similar kind of metaphor of living on borrowed money, if you will, is here what the metaphor of Rabbi Akiva talking about a shopkeeper. So he says as follows, Hachanut psucha, the shop is open, v'hachenvani makif, the chenvani, the shopkeeper, that's Hashem. Perhaps the word chenvani even has a shortage of chen, of like grace and kindness. Chen means when you are given something which you don't deserve at all. Okay, so we don't deserve it, but Hashem gives it to us. He's makif. Now, makif, like hakafa, in this context means to extend credit. So if you want to live on borrowed time and take what you can't afford, and you do averas, let's call them, so the chenvani, the shopkeeper, Hashem allows that. He gives you that slack. So you can go out of bounds, and there won't be immediate consequences. But v'hapinkas pasuach, the ledger that the shopkeeper keeps to make sure of, you know, who owes what, is open. And then v'hayad kosevas, and the hand, so to speak, is constantly writing. I mean, you can't distract the shopkeeper, and he won't notice what you're doing or what you're taking, and get away with it. No, no. Everything, every time a person gets out of line, everything a person takes in this world, which you shouldn't be taking, like, it's recorded. V'hakol harotze lilvos yavo v'yilve. No one's forcing you to do anything. No one's forcing you to borrow anything or go out of line or take what you can't afford. But there is slack. There's wiggle room. A person's given enough a rope to hang himself, if you will, God forbid. There's reshus nasuna. And therefore, if a person wants to borrow and take what he can't afford, he can. Meaning that will be he's got free will to you know, live above his means or to do what din doesn't allow for, etc. But the hagabai mechazrim tadir b'chol yom. Hashem's, you know, strong men, the goons of the shopkeeper who enforce people who have taken and not paid, etc. They're always going around v'nifra'in mina adam midato v'shlo midato. And they collect from a person if he owes the money from time to time, every day it says here, whether he knows and agrees or not. Doesn't matter. This tadir b'chol yom, this constant roving of the Hashem's strong arm people trying to, you know, collect what his Hashem's due, if you will, means that the din or the punishment, the consequences of going out of line, are collected slowly, slowly, little by little. And that's actually a chesed of Hashem. In other words, by a person enduring, like, you know, inconveniences, misfortunes, yisurin, along the way, the idea is that hopefully will wake him up and make him, you know, be mefashbish b'masav, to consider his actions and get back on the straight and narrow. So he'll do tshuva. So the little things, the little problems wake one up, and that's a chesed of Hashem to get a person to sort of fix himself up before, you know, the deadline comes, the deadline being when a person dies, he no longer has tshuva. No longer has tshuva, no longer has bechir, no longer has any opportunity to fix himself. Now, those gabayim who are collecting, v'yesh lehem alma sheyismachu, they, whatever din that they execute is a din emes, as the Mishnah says, v'ad din din emes. It's all justified, it's all fair. So when a person faces some yisurim, whatever the story is, some kind of suffering or some kind of trouble. So that is done justly. There's tzidduk ha-din. And a person has to, you know, look at these events as wake-up calls. V'hakol mesukan le-su'uda. And everything ultimately is there to arrange for the great su'uda. And the su'uda, which means like a meal, of course, is the metaphor Chazal use for life in the olam haba. There's the su'uda, this great su'uda, where all the tzaddikim are sitting around, and atraseim, baroshayim, they have these crowns on or in their heads, etc. The Rambam makes a big effort to point out that in his understanding, ultimately there'll be no body, just a soul, and therefore the metaphor of a su'udah is purely metaphorical. No one's actually literally eating or drinking, etc. Although I should point out there are other Rishonim who learned that there'll be tchiyas ameisim, and then the body will live on forever with the soul, in which case it could even be sort of a physical suit, if you will. I don't know what it'll be like, and I guess no one knows really. I and Lorasa, no one's seen it yet. But anyways, the point here is that the process of people living beyond their means, if you will, by doing averas and doing things that aren't justified, there'll be consequences, and the point of those consequences are to bring a person to do tshuva and pay back his debt, so to speak, so that he'll be ready for Olam Haba. And the truth is, even if one doesn't do that, so then as you said in the previous Mishnah, Hakol if Yiruva Maase, according to some shot, anyways, that'll mean that if a person dies with some averas on his plate, but he has more mitzvahs than the averas, so he'll be going to Olam Haba, but first he'll have to essentially go through the Gehenna process to be cleansed of those bad things, so that when he goes to the ultimate Su'udah of Olam Haba, he'll be Mitukan, he'll be fixed up, meaning that it'll be all good and he won't be, you know, reminded of his bad things, that part is the Gehenna process, but etc. But after you get past that, there's perhaps the Gan Eden and then the Olam Haba, and every person there is only getting good and reward without any of the punishment. He's been cleansed. So everything ultimately will be Mitukan, will be arranged and in order for that great Su'udah of Olam Haba.